Vicki, are you ready?
Ready.
I now call to order town council meeting. First, I'd like to ask everyone to make sure that the cellular phone is silenced or turned off. We begin our town council meeting with pledge allegiance followed by invocation. If there's anyone here that do not want to participate in either, you can step out at this time. At the conclusion of both, we'll have Chief Watts escort you back in. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we come to you tonight with thanksgiving. We thank you for all that you are doing for us and through us. We ask for Holy Spirit to come and dwell amongst us and be a part of this meeting. We ask for you to guide us, direct us, and so that your will can be done. Lord, we ask in your precious name. Amen.
Amen.
We now have a presentation from the Central Virginia Planning District Commission by Kelly Hitchcock.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you for the opportunity to come and share a little bit about a regional project, our safety action plan. So I'm here to talk to you about the Central Virginia Safety Action Plan. The PDC received a grant as part of the bipartisan infrastructure bill with a focus on developing what's called a comprehensive safety action plan, with a focus specifically on looking at the roadways and making them safer for all users, with the focus on identifying what's called your high injury network, with the focus of reducing those accidents that have resulted in fatalities or serious injuries. The PDC received a $280,000 grant matched by $70,000 in local dollars to do this regional study. And I've sort of done this, so that's the funding that we received. Again, the purpose, reduce fatalities and serious injuries on public roadways for all users. So that's pedestrian users, bicyclists, those in specialty devices, wheelchairs, also those that ride transit within our areas that applies. That's also for truck driver deliverers and anyone on our roadways. Again, the outcome is we will develop tools through a prioritized list of projects and programs and strategies that are focused on, again, reducing serious and fatal injuries. So this is not the study that's looking at potholes on the roads. Those are important projects and those are important things to be done, but that's not what this project is about. And again, an unfortunate statistic is in our region, between 2018 and 2023, there were 220 fatalities and 1,680 serious injuries. Now, certainly a lot more accidents, but that's the focus here, with the goal to reduce that to zero. And this project is going to be executed through something called a safe system approach. That is a new methodology that both the Federal Highway and, importantly, VDOT have established as a way to look at roadway fatalities, with the notion that sort of in the internal portion is what's called the priorities in there, that safe roadways are for all users, safe vehicles, right? We all have, as new vehicles come out with new technologies that are very valuable that we all use, safe speeds, learning where the speed limit really needs to be lower and how that data is so showing supporting of reducing roadways, safe roads, looking at post-crash care. So that's also within the state. When there is an accident and a police officer or emergency is called, reports are written, and it's really looking at unifying those reports for data. And on the outside are sort of the philosophical notion that everyone has responsibility, that that safety is a proactive approach. We need to be proactive and look at data in order to reduce accidents as opposed to reactive. So that's that safe distance approach. And again, this is not just a federal highway methodology. The state of Virginia has adopted this within their strategic roadway safety plan and within their safety analysis, which runs a portion of their SMART scale and their HCIP funding. So the components of a safety action plan, whether you are in Topeka, Kansas, or whether you are in Central Virginia, and you are developing this safety action plan according to a federal and state protocol. So these chapters, a leadership commitment, planning structure, a safety analysis, that's data, engagement and collaboration to make sure we're doing this in an open and transparent format. Policy and process change must be identified in the plan, a strategy on how we determine selections, and a progress for transparency. And so I'm here a little bit tonight because we're, you know, this process is starting out as a 10-month process. We'll be back to share with the public what we've learned next summer. So I'm here to talk about leadership commitment and safety analysis to give you an overview. Again, the unfortunate data, 220 fatalities, 1,680 serious injuries. But what is valuable, what is a good thing, is you see the blue line where the serious injuries, there has been a reduction in serious injuries. And that is a credit to the safety improvements that are made by VDOT, right, where we see different things. 5 years ago, when you were going down the road, you didn't used to hear that, right, when you're on certain roads. And they put those strips along the roadway, and they were done because in areas where there were intersections that had been unsafe, you know where they are, kind of on the two-lane road, they put those strips, and it's kind of when you know when your car goes across them, you kind of, your shoulders, you know, go back and you pay attention. That was a safe system approach. That was working, right? Reducing serious injuries, accidents. But fatalities, we need to work on those. And we need to work on everything, but it's using methodologies, and that's what we want to get to reduce those numbers. And importantly is we broke it down by localities, and we really are doing, our consultants are doing a very deep dive into the data, which we'll share with folks. When you go to our website, you can actually go, and we have all of the accident data that anyone in the public can look through. And what you see in Amherst County is of those fatalities, there were 20 vehicle drivers, accidents, motorcyclists, and then with the three that were pedestrians was part of those fatality numbers. And so what the study is looking at, part of it is looking at what's called a high injury network. And what those are, it is areas within the county that where you looked at data and where the data shows there's a high incidence of accidents, again, serious accidents and fatal accidents. And then our consultants narrowed those down. So within Amherst County, there's 46 miles that are integrated into that high injury network. There are 46 miles in Amherst County where the accident rates exceed what they should be, and they fall into what's called the top 1% of accidents or the top 5% of accidents in the state of Virginia. So if that area, that map is showing a little bit of red or a little bit of gold, that's what we're really going to be looking at, along with what we're hearing from the public, because what we know is that data is picking up accident points. So that's the time when a police officer was called and a report was written. Unfortunately, we all have experienced near misses. We all know where there's those intersections where you know people go through red lights. That's what we also want to learn about, because they're not data points, but we want to get them before they become a data point. So this is just a close-up of the town of Amherst, where what you're seeing there, that's the county. And that's, when you go to the CVPDC crash analysis dashboard, this information can be accessed on our website. You can toggle down and narrow it in by accident type. And in Amherst County, there were 160 serious accidents. Those are A's. And then the K's, or there were 22 accidents where folks, where the accidents resulted in a death. But what there also you'll see is we break the accidents down by the type of accidents that they are. So some of the accidents involved age drivers. Some of the accidents were impaired driving, right? The reality is, when there's an accident in impaired driving, that's not an engineering problem. That's a driver problem. That's maybe an education problem. So different accidents require different solutions. And so we're breaking all the data down and considering all the impacts. There are accidents where there are youth drivers, right? So as part of that, does there need to be a different campaign, right, where don't use your phones and those type of things? So we're breaking all this data down very intently. And so that portion there is accidents around the town of Amherst. So we can break it down very granular. And then what we have here, I know that is a lot of information, but it's just to show you the level of analysis that the consultants are doing. Essentially, when you're looking on that, within the columns, you'll see impaired driving, speeding, occupant, so roadway departure. That means someone went off the road. And you'll see on the third column down, as the row down, it says speeding. And when you follow that across in that fourth column, you see that there's that bright red. And essentially what that's saying is when there was an accident that was a roadway departure, 34 of those accidents were a function of speeding. So we're looking at what type of accidents they were, and then what were some of the factors that resulted in those accidents, and then we're going and looking at some of those key points, and then we'll have engineers look at the analysis around those intersections. So we'll look at where it makes sense for there to be engineering solutions and where there might be other solutions. So it's a very detailed, data-driven study that's being developed. And then another thing we're going to be looking at some of the socioeconomic and other factors that might play into accidents. You know, if you have a high incidence of maybe poverty, or you have a high area of incidents where individuals do not have access to a car, and then we have a high percentage of pedestrian accidents. So it's also looking at the data to make sure that we do some tailoring based on some socioeconomic factors, some vulnerability factors, where we might have a senior facility. We can run data to see whether we're finding that there's certain accidents around a senior facility or around a medical facility where the response and the solutions might be different based on the inputs and outputs around the region, around those specific data points. And then I at the beginning, I talk about leadership commitment. That's one of the things that the Comprehensive Safety Action Plan requires. The federal government and VDOT need a commitment from those localities that choose to approve the Safety Action Plan as a methodology to open, you know, sort of opening the quiver for other federal funding to respond to some of the solutions that we might have. So we might find a location that needs an engineering solution. will come up with those solutions. But by having an adopted plan, you then are able to go after both federal and state dollars to address some of those solutions. But the safety action plan for those localities that choose to do so are asked to make a commitment to suggest that you will support the notion of reducing serious accidents and fatalities, which is not a hard thing to do. But I do want to point out that sometimes people will hear something called Vision Zero. And, you know, that is not to suggest that 100% of all accidents will go to zero. That's probably not likely. But because we're not talking about small accidents, we're not talking about fender benders. We're talking about the vision that no one is killed on a roadway and no one has serious accidents. But what a locality can do is they can simply make a commitment to reduce whatever number we come back and present to you guys in the spring of 25. We know what your initial numbers are on your accident data. If a locality chooses to a goal to reduce by 50% that number by 2045, which is the state's commitment, that is a resolution that provides you the ability to have an adoption of a safety action plan. So we'll be back to you in the spring, and we encourage you to, here's what's next. We had focus group meetings. We've had focus group meetings in each of the localities. We have a public survey that's out now. We encourage you to go to cvsafestreets.com. I think on your website we have information. cvsafestreets.com. We have a survey, and the survey literally has a map where you can drag and pull and just pin, say, you know what, I'm driving in Amherst County and this street really, you know, it's too dark, or this intersection, or this area is really curved and I've seen accidents happen. This is the kind of thing I heard yesterday at the senior lunch, which was phenomenal. So we'll have safety workshops in January. We'll share information about that. We're calling that a safety summit. We think that's going to either be the 30th or 31st of January, but we'll finalize that. And at those safety summits, we'll really present all of the data that we've learned in the area. And then we'll have our draft project recommendations will be developed in December and March. And again, in May, we'll have the draft plan. And with that, I'll answer any questions. And again, there's the website, cvsafestreets.com. Yes, sir.
Do you have any, your model include the deer factor, or old deer, as in wild deer?
Well, what it does have, I can't say that it specifically has deer, but it probably does. If in the police report, lots of times it's called roadway departures, and that's essentially what happens, right? Someone's going down the road, they see a deer, they either put on their brakes and they go off, or they hit a deer and it results in an accident. So if in the police report it has that secondary information, by all means, it's in the data. And again, if as you go to cvsafestreets.com, you can take the survey, and also on that website, you'll see the CVPDC crash dashboard. You'll hit that, and anyone can look at the accident data that we have currently between those accidents. And then again, if you take that survey, you can drag and share information that is incredibly valuable to us, because we'll take every comment that we receive, cross-reference it with accident data. Then our engineers will actually go out and see what there might be happening in those areas, and we'll report it all, what we learn. So I appreciate your time.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
When you talk about leadership commitment, is there a financial commitment to that as well from the localities?
That's a very good question. No.
Okay.
There is not. It is just the commitment that you will support actions and some of the strategies that will move the needle in reducing some of those accidents. But what that looks like.
We use the word support. It also means a financial backing.
Yes.
Thank you for clarifying.
But that's a very good question. So thank you so much for your
time. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Consent agenda, town council minutes. I need a motion on that.
I'll make that motion.
I have one item. Typo. Page 4, under the table, it lists personal policy instead of personnel policy.
I can fix that.
It's the first paragraph. I would have told you earlier, but I just saw it.
You just saw it. Okay. If y'all would go on and make the motion, y'all would.
I'll make the motion with that correction.
Yeah. One second. Second. Vote.
Aye.
Okay. Check approval. I think.
Mr. Vice Mayor, I would like for you to be able to pull out check number 6388 to Hill. House and Hill Hardware Corporation for the amount of 89267, and I would like that to be voted on separately.
I would like to have a motion on the checks like it is, then we have another motion on removing this check. So have a motion on just like it is, approving?
No. Do a motion on all the checks except that check.
Accept that check, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Motion on all of the checks except number 6388.
Second.
Okay. Vote.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Okay. Now we're going to need a motion on with the number 6388 removed.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Vote.
Give it to you.
Aye.
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 Okay. Great. Okay. Moving to correspondence reports, staff reports, other reports. They are attached, so we'll move on to discussion items. And at this time, I will turn it over to Town Administrator, Ms. Sarah McGuffin.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. The first thing that we have for you is a report on the lead service line inventory. I have asked Allison Davis to come to you tonight to do that. She is the one who has really spearheaded that work. This is one of those things that we were required to do. There was grant funding that was available. She's going to go through all of that for you and answer any questions that you have. So with that, Allie, would you come on down? Would you like me to push the buttons, or do you want to push the buttons?
Push the buttons.
I push the buttons?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do it. She's the drawing. Just going to leave it with that. It's easier. Go ahead.
You can go ahead. So basically, it started last October, and it took about a year to submit everything to the state. A little more than a year. Go ahead. So it was a year-long process. We mailed out flyers. We sent out emails to water customers. We made hundreds of phone calls. And then the town set up a line through Open Phone that allowed residents to call in or text their picture of their water line. And then as an incentive to residents who participated with the inventory, we gave them a $40 water bill credit. And by the time the submission was sent to the state, we gave out $13,320 in water bill credits.
And then we ended this summer with myself and some maintenance guys going door to door to residences and businesses that we hadn't heard from yet. We showed two homes that have lead water lines on the private side out of 1,170 connections, and there are no lead water lines on the public side. And there's still 45 unknown lines between vacant properties, homes that are for sale that we couldn't get into, and customers who still haven't submitted their water line material. And we actually originally secured a loan for, or funding for, I think it's $250,000. And then the state came back to us and said, if you don't need that whole $250,000, then to like give back what we don't need. So we ended up submitting, or no, we ended up getting $116,000 in funds. And then the funding also covers the open phone charge reimbursement, water bill credits, the maintenance crew hours for home inspections, and then the hours that I spent on the spreadsheet throughout the year. And in total, 700 hours were spent on the, over 700 hours were spent on the inventory.
Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Davis?
Job well done.
Thank you.
This really was a huge effort, and I'm really proud of the town staff for how they did this. So Allie was the person who had to delve into what the law said. There was a very specific spreadsheet that you had to fill out for VDH. This wasn't you submitted it the way you wanted it to. You had to submit it on their form, and she got the information to Mrs. Morgan and her staff to be able to give the credits. And it's really nice to be able to say that out of all of our water users, we only have 45 addresses that we're still looking to get data on. And then this is information that we will resubmit every year to VDH as we get those last 45 homes. And then as maintenance works on getting rid of those two lead lines we know about. We do have one lead line that we replaced last year. And then we're hoping in this coming year before the next October 16th timeframe that we will be able to go ahead and replace those two that we do know about. So I just want to thank Allie for her work on this, and Ms. Davis has done a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, next up we have a report on speed limit options. Mrs. Kemp has done some research and wanted to follow up with council about what she found from VDOT. Mrs. Kemp?
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Great. So this is two Kellys tonight coming with some roads information, which is a unique coincidence. I'm so glad that Ms. Hitchcock was here. So I think it actually will dovetail nicely with what I have. So in September, council passed three ordinances that gave the town manager very limited and narrow authority to make some changes to speed limits within the town. This was in regard specifically to Macadam Road coming out, being used more frequently because of construction at the high school. Since then, VDOT has disagreed with the town's interpretation of a few key state codes. So before you should have a copy of 46.2-1300, and I believe 46.2-875. And these are by no means exhaustive lists of all of the state codes having to do with roads or speed limits, but just to keep it sort of simple. And this is really, I had a conversation with VDOT just to try to understand, and, you know, this is sort of a matter of we agree to disagree, but it was very helpful to get their information and their input as to how they're interpreting these statutes differently. So where we agree is that 46.2-1300A4, we agree that the town has the ability to reduce the speed limits in those very narrow circumstances where there are roads that were already marked 25 miles per hour or lower. So that's the portion we agree on. VDOT argues that the rest of 46.2-1300 only applies to localities that operate and maintain their own road system, which the town does not and does not want to be in the business of doing. So we had a good conversation about how they got to that, and part of it is embedded within the language of 1300A4 stating specifically that even on roads that are within the state system. Part of where they're coming from with their analysis has a lot to do with the history on this state code. It has been amended several times. I think there's one specific legislator that kind of keeps coming up with drafts and they keep working through it. So it seemed to me that some of their analysis was coming from some historical conversations and legislative intent that are not part of the legislative record necessarily, but are part of simply the fact that VDOT's reviewing some of these bills and pre-bills that legislators put forth. So I think that is part of their analysis. And I'll tell you I think we all agree that VDOT does, they maintain the roads, they set the speed limits. And their point sort of was if the town were to come in and reduce speed limits, it can affect, the overall traffic of an area. So if the town reduced the speed limit and it doesn't, now the lights, the stoplights aren't synced, that can cause traffic problems, which makes sense. However, I don't see that in the actual state code. You also have in front of you, just part of my analysis when I was reviewing the codes is, 46.2.875 states that localities that maintain their own roads, it gives them the ability to increase and decrease speed limits. Essentially the same as 46.2.1300A1. So you wouldn't need both. And they use the same terminology. I think when we brought the ordinances before you, we talked a little bit about the term traffic investigation. That's a pretty specific term. VDOT language often is a traffic study. So they're mirroring each other's language, which I think bolsters our argument that 1300 is more inclusive than they argue. So all of that to say, I think it was a good conversation. I'm glad that Ms. Hitchcock was there because my advice is that the town will probably do better to not, try to start a war with VDOT, but rather work through the process through other means, working with your VDOT district rep. And it sounds like Ms. Hitchcock may have some ability for some conversations and some ways that citizens can give their input on other roads that may be problematic from a speed standpoint. The other option is that the town can request an opinion from the Attorney General. That may or may not, I can't say that the Attorney General will agree with the town, but it's certainly an option if the sort of a third party, although that is a state agency. So I wouldn't repeal the ordinances at this point. They're there. They're not in violation of anything. So that's my recommendation is that the town, if there's specific roads that the town wants to reduce the speed limits, that they work with VDOT through some different channels at this point. And it may be that this particular code section, it's been amended several times in the last 4 years. It could come back this year. I haven't looked to see if it's been pre-filed. So that's where we are. I'm happy to answer any questions or address any concerns that you may have.
Ms. Kim, Kim Watts. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I would be very interested in hearing what the Attorney General would think of this. I'd love to hear his opinion. Not that we would necessarily use it against VDOT, but I just want to see how he interprets this, if you don't mind.
Okay. And, you know, you may get a faster response if we ask VDOT, but I actually would prefer, if the town wants it, I would prefer to request it so that we can frame it. I just think if we frame the question, it might be different from the way VDOT frames it. So, and I'm happy to do that if that's the consensus from council.
So the question would be if council would like to see an attorney general opinion about what this code section reads. So for Mrs. Kemp and for me reading this code section, it reads like the town has authority to do this. What VDOT is saying is that three of the four code sections in that section only apply to localities that maintain their own streets. So if the council would like, Mrs. Kemp can ask the state attorney general to make a ruling on this. This would not be quick, but when you request an opinion, it kind of goes in the hopper and you wait for an opinion to come back out. But if we do that and she formulates it, she will structure the question to get that information from a town point of view. So I guess I don't think we need a motion. I think you just need a consensus to follow through on what Mr. Watts has suggested.
So what's the benefit of going that direction versus working with VDOT on?
Well, no, I think we should work with VDOT. This is just, I want to know what his opinion is on it. Are we right or are we wrong?
I see.
And but
I
do advocate working with VDOT to try to accomplish this.
I would like to ask, Mayor, may I ask a question?
Sure.
We just heard this from Ms. Hitchcock regarding the Central Virginia Safety Action Plan, and it sounds like that is going to, our concerns will be addressed, if I'm not mistaken, within this survey and this study going forward. It may not happen overnight, but within months we may have an answer. Should we wait because this is what they're doing?
So the safety action plan is going to be very narrowly defined to really only address fatalities and major accidents. So it's really not going to address concerns that are going to be like the ones that we heard brought up on Sunset.
Okay.
Because, you know, the accidents I think that are occurring on Sunset or the concerns that people have on Sunset are not falling into that fatality and major accident category.
Okay.
Most of the ones you're seeing around town where those are happening on the bypass or on Route 60.
Okay.
So where you've got higher speeds and more traffic. So ultimately, Mrs. Kemp and I, when we've talked about it, we believe, as Mr. Watts has said, that you should work through VDOT. So the normal process would be, if citizens came and requested a speed reduction on a road like Sunset, what we would do is we would ask council to pass a resolution saying that we're requesting VDOT do a speed study on that road and determine if that should be lowered. VDOT would then put that on their work program. When it came up, they would perform the speed study and they would determine whether or not that speed limit was reduced. The power of the decision is ultimately in the hands of VDOT. The difference between what VDOT does and what this code section says is Mrs. Kemp and I both believe that the logical and rational reading of the code section is that council ultimately has authority to reduce those speed limits themselves. VDOT is saying no, three of those four code sections are only intended for localities that maintain their own roads, and they're trying to point to other places in the code that they feel like justifies that, but Mrs. Kemp and I are both going, it doesn't actually say that. We think the code should be clearer. I think that VDOT is correct on what the intent of it is, but that we don't think that's actually what it says. So with that, we can determine whether council would like to pursue getting an opinion on it, whether council would like to just wait and see if this plays out in the General Assembly this year.
I'll follow council's lead.
Did Attorney Kemp advise us not to?
Not challenge VDOT.
Yeah.
This is not a challenge. We're just trying to figure what the Attorney General thinks.
Right. The Attorney General's ruling is not going to be whether or not that's really just going to say this is what the law is. So anytime there's a question about what state code says, it is the Attorney General's job to make that ruling. So he puts out opinions that says this is the interpretation of state code in that case.
I don't see anything negative about doing that, do you?
I don't. I think there's a benefit to having the question answered, not just for us, but for all localities. And if VDOT, if they don't want the code to say that, then the code should reflect what is true and accurate.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't have a problem doing that as long as we continue to use avenues, because Sunset's obviously a question. The road down near the high school is still in question. Mm-hmm. So
that's been resolved.
That one has.
It has completely,
yes.
From construction purposes or permanently?
They have not indicated any desire to change it once the construction is completed.
Okay, but it's under a construction. I mean, I know we did that through construction.
We did, but then VDOT, in response to our concerns, has taken it
okay.
under their own authority
okay.
And,
okay.
and made that change.
So that's a permanent change.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I wouldn't be opposed to moving forward in both avenues.
I'm in favor of going to the Attorney General.
Mrs. Kemp, there seems to be a consensus from council to solicit an opinion of the Attorney General on this issue.
Okay, I will draft it and I will send it to Ms. McGuffin for review to make sure I captured the question and framed it as we interpret it to be. like Ms. McGuffin said, it could be several months, and I will watch it on the bills that are being introduced. That could affect whether or not how quickly the AG responds or not. But it could also possibly it could possibly be helpful in bringing this back, because as Ms. McGuffin said, I think even VDOT would say it's not terribly clear.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Kemp.
Thank you.
Okay, the final item under your discussion items is to set a public hearing for the Amherst Mountain Biking Club lease at Brockman Park. So the Mountain Biking Club has requested additional use at Brockman Park for trails. They made this request initially to the Economic Development Authority, who is your steward of the park. The Economic Development Authority has recommended moving forward with this lease. In order to do so, the Planning Commission will need to hold a public hearing, which they have set for next month, to have a finding of substantial accord with your comprehensive plan for this use. And Council will need to either accept or reject that finding and also hold a public hearing for a lease for that use. So anytime a government entity is leasing or selling or buying land, there's a public hearing associated with that. So staff is requesting that you set a public hearing for a potential lease to the Mountain Biking Club at Brockman Park.
I'll make a motion to set the public hearing.
I'll second that motion.
Aye.
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 Did you vote aye, Ms.
Aye, yes, I'm sorry.
I just want to make sure I had not heard someone.
I'm whispering.
Sorry. That's all under the discussion items on the matter from staff. Mr. Vice Mayor.
Matters from staff. Any staff members have any comments?
No.
Going once, going twice.
Vicki has one.
I just want to remind everybody that the Christmas parade is a little more than 3 weeks away, if you can believe that. So hope everybody comes out. We're still looking for someone. If y'all know anybody from a church, like a church youth group or children's group that would like to sing on our stage prior to the parade, if you'd let me know. Just a little short 15-minute performance, something like that, be great. And that's all I've got.
Okay.
I have a couple things, Mr. Rice Mayor. First, I did just want to let folks know, those of you who are water customers may have gotten a letter in the mail about a water testing issue that we had. We have regular water tests that we take. We took the water test. We passed the water test. However, in our form that we submitted with the water test, there was a piece of information that while we had taken it, we did not put it on that form. So we had to send everybody that letter. But there was nothing wrong with the water. Everything is fine. It's just that when you have something that isn't completed on those forms, you do have to notify all of your customers, which we hate to do because there's an expense associated with that. But we are following through on our responsibilities that the state gives us to protect your water. The second thing I wanted to point out, I don't know if any of you noticed, out in the lobby when you came in, just above where you sign in for citizen comments, there are a couple of photographs there. Mr. Fred Loving gave those to the town when he was here last. And Allie and Ms. Davis took care of getting those framed for me actually today. She got it done this morning. So those are now on display out in that lobby if anyone wants to see them. So we thank Mr. Loving for giving those to the town, and it's nice to have those displayed. So I think it's neat to be able to add those like mementos when we get them from different groups.
Open citizen comments. Don Thomas. 30 minutes, but three.
I know. Well, I'll start with you, Mr. Vice Mayor, Ms. McGuffin, council members. I want to bring a topic to my concern, and it has been for a number of years since we came back, of a noise problem in the area that I live in. First, I want to thank Officer Watts. He really spoke with me and then forwarded this, fielded this to you all, which I know you already know a little bit about it. But what I thought I would do is just give you a personal scenario. So kind of picture you're sitting in your den, nice Sunday afternoon, and all of a sudden you say, I think somebody's cutting a chainsaw down in your front yard. And you go out, and we look and we see across the between the gap in the woods, a four-wheeler, assuming allegedly no muffler. And it goes on for 30 minutes, sometimes an hour. It's just so loud. You just hear it constantly. So that right there is something that really bothers. It's just really hard to concentrate, to do stuff, to enjoy your time. The second one is a house that's a couple of up from us. They have an extremely large bass contraption with their stereo because it has shook my windows sometimes. And I have made many calls because that's where I found out that there's a 7 p.m. noise ordinance. So from that, and both of these can be random. They can be a week, they can be 2 weeks, they can be 3 days in a row. But when they are there, and just think what it is when they're both there at the same time. I'm sitting in my office. All of a sudden, I hear that bass, and it's just very hard to work, and it's 3 hours in the afternoon, so it doesn't fit the 7 p.m. So I am respectfully asking you all to consider a decibel ordinance instead of a time ordinance. Maybe we can have both, but that is my request. Thank you very much.
Chief Watts, don't we have a decibel?
No, sir. It's just it's time frame at this point, and with the way that the ordinance is written at this point, it is unenforceable, is what I've come to find out with the Commonwealth Attorney. Yeah.
Mr. Vice Mayor, if I may, in the past, noise ordinances could be based on kind of this general sense of disturbing kind of the peace and quietude of people in a community, and you could have time. Courts have no longer upheld those. So if this is something that council would like to pursue, we would be bringing to you a revised draft for a noise ordinance, and it would be based on the idea that the police officers would have access to a decibel meter that had been calibrated. They would be able to go out. We would have standards for different types of items, different times of the day. Mrs. Kemp has already sent me some drafts of what those could look like. So if that's something council would like to proceed with, let staff know, and we'd be happy to start working on some tracks.
Well, I think since it's unenforceable, I think that we need to do it because this is not the only situation that we'll run into. So if that's what it requires, I'm in favor of rewriting the ordinance.
Well, and I'm also in favor of getting the equipment that they need to be able to enforce it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that the general consensus of council to proceed with working on an ordinance?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We will be getting work on that.
So would that include, like, if somebody's, like, building a shed or something like that, and their hammers are making loud noises?
So generally speaking, the drafts that Mrs. Kemp had forwarded to me did exclude certain types of activities, and one of the activities that is excluded is construction. So, you know, if somebody's taking down a tree in their backyard, if someone's building a shed, those are the kinds of activities that are excluded. Mowing your grass is excluded. So those types of maintenance and construction activities, those are not included. One of the questions that I had for Chief Watts and for Mrs. Kemp is that there is a state law that addresses, for example, loud mufflers, but many noise ordinances also address vehicle noise. So I'm very curious to figure out exactly where the intersection between state code and what that code says goes with what a town ordinance would say. So we're going to need to do some research to make sure that we're prepared on that, but we will work that out.
Can I say, my name wasn't on there, but I have some information. 127 yards from my back door to that residence, and I have a meter. And at 127 yards, it read 90 decibels. So I can run my power saw, and it would not register 90 decibels at 127 yards.
Well, I haven't heard the music, but I've heard the full width.
So anyway, that's just some.
Does a citizen approach for the idea that their noise level is disturbing another citizen, and they just completely disregard it? If we go through all the expense of doing anything else,
I think it's been. Has anybody talked to them?
With the folks, yes, they haven't talked to them. That's how they know the 7 p.m. Line, and they run it right to 7 p.m. and I can confirm what he says.
Moving on, matters from town council.
None, thank you.
Okay, three. One, we just talked about this working with VDOT, but we have a request that came in last month to request it. Something to be done at speed. So I think, in my opinion, it's time we start working VDOT on this, if council is so inclined. I mean, at least get a study. If they say, no, we don't want to do it, then okay, don't do it. But I think the study's warranted if they'll do it.
Mr. Watts, may I put that on the agenda for next month for sure. Council to vote on a resolution sure. for Sunset Drive? Sure. Very well.
Second thing, just a heads up to council. In the budget, upcoming budget year, I'm going to be asking Ms. McGuffin to put a new pool car in the budget, something smaller and a little bit better on gas. The reason is the Explorer, Ms. McGuffin and I took that to Virginia Beach to a conference a few weeks ago. And immediately when I got into it, I noticed a musty smell of mold and mildew in there. The thing's leaking something terrible. We drove it down, we drove it back. I got back and I immediately got a respiratory infection. I don't know if it's from that, but it was all from Quinsman, which happened right after that. I don't think health-wise it's safe to be driving it by the staff for that reason. Third thing is, Ms. McGuffin, I noticed when I was coming to work and going to work this morning that there's several streetlights out on South Main Street. I think if they haven't been requested to be repaired, probably need to request them pretty quick to have it ready, hopefully by the Christmas parade.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking about. It's Christmas parade.
Very good.
And that's all I have.
I don't have anything.
Anticipated town council agenda items for next month.
We'll have that Sunset Drive on the rest of it. It'll just be what's been on your report.
Okay. And ready to adjourn.
I make that motion?
I'll second.
She
seconded.
Adjourn.